Accession number 18261, Reel 5.
Let's start Reel 5.
Right. And there was this bridge, and across the other side, the red and white pole was up. That was the Yugoslav side. I said to this Greek, right, we'll go across, we'll hurtle across, turn around and come back again. Oh, no, anyway, we did. Went hurtling across, turned right round in a circle in this bit there by their guard up and tore back again. They were so taken back that they didn't bother to put their hand up. The pole never came down. We got back to the camp. It was about 3-4 o'clock in the morning we got back to the camp. And obviously, as I said, taking the wrong road. So the next morning I went to bed, half past six, the NTO came in. Where are they? I said, I've no idea. I explained to them the road we take, and I said, it must have been the other one that goes up the mountains. Not the one we came down from the south. The roads were very few and far between. I said, it must be the one in the middle. He said, I'll take a lorry, so you can see if I can find them. I said, all right. He said, you get organised. So then the phone rang. It was the quartermaster. He was kicking up all kinds of... So he was. So I explained to him what had happened, especially with the Messer officer. He sacked him, got another officer instead. He said, you'll never do that again, he said. He said, if anything like this, he said, is required, he said, food especially, he said, you will supply it. Because he used to make sure that the blokes, when they come out of the line, as quartermaster, they got a hot meal. That was, they were absolutely, never went without a meal. When they came out the line, whether they're in there for 3 days or 3 months, they got a hot meal. He laid it on. So, bring your truck up here. He said, you'll have to go and look for him. I said, well, Fred's gone. I don't care what Fred's done. He said, it's up to you. He said, you're going to do it. I said, all right. The MT sergeant, he went off somewhere, racing about looking for something. He was due to come home in the next boat, because we had a boat a month by now. And I got stocked up with food and blankets and petrol and tyres. I had enough food to last us about 3 months of the time he'd finished giving it to you, tins of stuff and ditches to heat it up in, and these little diesel burners they had to do it, you know, and all sorts of things. I collected the wrecker again and off we went. So, right, so we met the MTO. He had a half-ruined vehicle because he tried to tow a lorry loaded up with wood. And I met the MT sergeant. I said, what's up with you then? He said, I can't tow him. He said, I'll burn the clutch eight now. Oh, here we go. So I said, right, you get off. So we went on. We found the GMC stuck in the side of the road with four flat tyres. He had one spare. We'd taken three with us. That's all we had, was three spare, four altogether. So I left him, and he was dead hungry, cold. So I'll give him my overcoat and a loaf of bread. That'll do you for now. Went on up the mountain, but this time we were going up and up, and it was one of those roads you see on television with a sheer wall up here and a sheer wall down there sort of thing, you know, just... So the Ford, there was a Ford lorry, he was down the road for it. That's the one the MTO had burnt his... ruined, or the sergeant ruined his clutch with. So I was up the road for it. They met one of our own lorry. A Chev was one of our own. He was the only one running. Well, no, the first one was a carrier, an old carrier. That's why not a Ford carrier. He was towing the Ford. He had something wrong. I don't know what it was. His radiator was busted and he had no brakes. And to stop, he had to run in the back of the... Anyway, I got turned round, went back down the road. We chucked half of the wood out there, GMC, in the back of the Dodge and changed his wheels. I said, right, I said to... You carry, I said, I'm going on down the road. You help me change these wheels. I said, I'm going down the road. There's one of these cantina places down the road. And the man who made a living, it was right in the middle of nowhere. It was up the mountains. I said, I'll go and sort him out. So I went down there, and I couldn't speak many words of Greek, but neither could he speak English. But we managed to make him understand. A big belly, big stove in the middle of the floor. They used to keep going all night up there. And I got round to him. We wanted to cook some food. So anyway, I took it in there and we got a big Dixie on his stove. We put tins of bully beef in it, sausages, well, soya links they call them, as you could think of, stew all in this Dixie, double water, cooked it up, She went in the back with other Dixie and her fire to make tea. We've got plenty of tea. So the others arrived. So we had to put a guard on all night anyway, because we took it in turns to guard them all night. And the rest of us put the blankets on the floor and got in a heap on the floor. We kept the fire going all night. We gave them some wood. We gave them some food. We gave them grub. We gave them plenty of food. We had everything we did. So the next morning, we gave them some more. I gave them some more grub, and off we went. And I took the other one on tow, the carrier on tow. I said to the GMC bloke, the other bloke, I said, you better go into the Greetswood Yard. He knew where it was. With the Ford, I said, unload and come back to the camp. I said, the GMC can get under his own steam, he can go to the camp and I'll tow this thing. So let's say we got back into the camp. We've been gone up there for... Well, they've been gone from 6 o'clock in the morning till 4 o'clock the day after next, before they got back. And I'd been up there from twice. Anyway, we got back in. I was supposed to be on guard mountain, guard commander. So I got ticked off over that. And the RSM and me weren't exactly friends at the best of times. We did go on for some reason or other. Because he was one of, he'd been 19 years in the army. He'd been most of them in England. Had a defence medal. That was it. Was some of the blokes had a role on, you know. And anyway, we... As I say, we didn't get on very well, but we went on and on. The bloke went home, and Fred was... I had some terrible problems half the time. I was company orderly corporal, which is a job you have to detail everybody for guards and everything in the whole of the company, you know, and we were getting depleted from men. They were going home, and they weren't bringing anybody out much. They were bringing none from England at all. And a 12-hour guard was turned out from 4 o'clock in the afternoon to late the next morning. And there was 10,000 rounds of ammunition in the guard room. They're supposed to count every one of them, make sure they're all there. And the same in the morning when you added back to police, but no, I didn't ever count it. The only thing that was any significance was the colours, the regimental colours, which I sat on all night. So Fred was going back to Borden on a course. He said, and you can go on one where you go on one leave. Now, leave, we had a month's leave after a year. LEAP, they called it. Leave in advance of Python. Python was after 3 years, but we would get to that. So the ones that got out of me went home, came back, went home. I said, kept on up the order. I said, where am I going home then? He said, well, I don't know. He said, your name's not on the list. I said, well, it should be on the list. I've been as long as they have. Now everyone got fobbed off. UCO coming. Colonel Kirby, Honest John, captured at cost, a proper soldier. So I was underneath a jeep, my feet sticking out, and my voice said, hello. Oh, takes his brain boots there. There he is, officer of some sort. It was him. So he starts to talk, and he realised straight away that I wasn't a Durham fella. That's where I came from, I told him. How long have you been out here? No, he said, did I know Iverson Park? I said, yeah, I know Iverson Park. He said, I used to go there in peacetime. He said, we used to have country parties, you know, one of these big posh houses it is to Haversworth. I said, yes. He said, how long have you been out here? I said, I don't know, I've been out there. This was middle of June, this was, and I'd been out there since March. February I left England, 16 months. He said, yeah, have I got a good wood races? I said, yeah, sometimes. He said, would you like to be over the races? I said, yeah, it'd be very nice. He said, right, I'll see what I can do. I was on the next boat. I got home on the Saturday, as the races started on the Tuesday. We lived at Charlton still then. And, well, they moved to Charlton while I was out in the army. They moved from Maidhurst to Charlton, because my dad was forming the sawmill then. And so I came home. I came on the Empress of Australia. It had been the Empress of Japan at one time. And a Canadian Pacific ship. And in the deck was a brass plate where they'd... when it was a cruise ship in 1923, I believe it was, it rescued God knows how many people. That Japanese... what's it called? It blew up. Was it, wasn't like Okinawa? It was somewhere in Japan. There's... not an earthquake, the other thing. The old...
Volcano.
Or something blew up, and they were in the harbour visiting the place, and they rescued, put God knows how many people on board, got them out of the thing. I forget the name of the place. There was a nice boat. Didn't do much on there, just sit and play cards and drink tea and eat biscuits and so on and so forth. And till I got collared for police duty. Walking a bit with SP on my arm, and we pulled into Liverpool. Got off, got documented on the train, then home. Got home on the Saturday afternoon anyway. A month's leave. So about the beginning of this last week, there's a radio message coming through, the draft number so-and-so, letter to follow, will not go back to Liverpool, I'll go to Southampton on such and such. It was 3 days later, I got the letter. So he goes to Southampton, ideal for me, not so good for the fellas up the north, but all right for me. And it took us 10 days on the boat, from Salonika to Liverpool. Gets down to Southampton, and there was this blooming old thing in there, the Chitral. Indian banana boat, I think it was. It was awful, it was. Oh dear, oh dear. So we went back and got back to Salonika. We had fish for breakfast and supper 4 days, ate the 10, 11 days it took us to get back. All Lascar crewmen, you know, Indian Lascars. So back to soldiering, looking after the MT. I hadn't got promoted to sergeant yet. Fred said I was supposed to got promoted. What had happened was that with the bloke that took over from him while he was in England, a lieutenant, had a mate who came from the same village up in Northumberland, so he got promoted to sergeant instead of me, you see. So I didn't bother. The only thing that bothered me was that they owed me 9 months back pay, a shilling a day. So I got it eventually. I got 9 months back pay, a shilling a day. Because, you know, 7 days a week we got paid for, plus 4 months overseas allowance. And I took a livery truck out one night, ran ahead first into a tram car. He was on the same side of the road as me, so I got put off the road for a while and had a court of inquiry. Two officers and a company sergeant major. Another one I didn't like. There's a lot of people I didn't get on with very well in the army, I can assure you. And
Why didn't you get on with them?
Well, I didn't like second lieutenants for a start. I still don't like the second lieutenants, especially university ones. But I just didn't seem to get on with them very well. I mean, I didn't like these old boys who were steeped in Wellingtonian traditions trying to organise us when we should be doing something better. You know what I mean? We should be getting on with something. We shouldn't be marching up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down like the grand old Duke of York. I mean, I went up to, when I was company orderly corporal, it rained for 4 days. I was soaked through, all my kit was absolutely soaked through. So I borrowed a pair of Wellington boots, so I borrowed a DR's coat, and I went up to the orderly room with a steel helmet on and all this kit on, and the RSM took one look and he jumped out of his boots. Anyway, the adjutant said, "What's going on?" He took me, he started to laugh, he had to look away and laugh. He said, don't do it again, will you?" I said, "No, all right, I won't do it again." I said, "I had to keep dry." I said, "Oh, I've got 3 suits of battle dress, everyone soaked through, including my overcoat." Anyway, a little while after that, I was guard commander, which is a job I hated. I still couldn't do the drill properly anyway. And, because light infantry drill is entirely different to everything else. It's faster, it's shorter, it's better. It's really ideal. I couldn't do it. I'd been trained at guards drill in the parachute regiment, and that's still stuck. I mean, we'd done everything. We'd even done funeral drill, you know, and all that sort of thing, you see. So I went on guard. We'd had a bad week. It had rained and everything else. We had a bad week. I had a cold. I came off guard the next morning at 8 o'clock. I had a bad day. I had to go out as well as doing all the things, the sheets. Went to bed that night. It was 10 days before I come round. They got the MO down to him. He couldn't wake me up. They got the MO down. He said, "Well, he's breathing." "I think he's all right," he said. "Just keep in touch. Make sure he gets plenty of drink." So the other two fellas did. And it was nearly 10 days before I come round.
What did you have?
Don't know. I was just... I think it was... What it was is what they would call today stress. Well over the top. You either go like that or you go mad, don't you? One or the other. And there was nothing organically wrong with me. I had nothing wrong. It's just that I just slept and slept and slept. Anyway, I woke up one morning at the valley, off to work, as if nothing had happened. And I had my days mixed up. And I knew by that I'd been, because the MTO came in. He said, "Oh," he said, "you're about then." I said, "Yeah." I said, "What's wrong with the, what's the date then?" So I said, "Where have I been?" He said, "In bed." He used to drag me up the toilet, just only really water. I never had anything for that time either, just drink. And that night, I was dog tired, I went to bed that night, but I was all right after that. But I think a lot of it was the absolute stress. So we were working long hours because we were depleted. You know, we're down to about 300 men by this time from 800 where they were going away. We had a few coming from Egypt who brought the other disease with them. That's out there. We used to have our own...
Malaria?
No, we had malaria, it's that other thing. Well, we got an injection for it. They brought it with them from Egypt anyway. There was a buffs and that. And I'll think about it apparently. But we used to take a little yellow pill every day, Mepocrine, every day from April to November, when we wore shorts. And then we wore long trousers at night and kept the sleeves down for anti-mosquito. We slept in mosquito nets from April to November. And we had one Mepocrine pill every lunchtime, or tiffin time they called it. One of the army words from India, tiffin. And anyway, I got over that. I got this tram car. We went off the road for 6 weeks. I drove a road roller for 6 weeks, making a car park and a playing field and God knows what else. And on the court of inquiry, the two officers were for me and the CSM was against me. He said it was his fault entirely. Well, he told me that himself. Your fault. And he wrote the CO. He said, I'm going to put it down. He said, I think that you're more to blame than the tram car was. Well, he couldn't. The tram lines were on that side. We drove on the right-hand side, you see. And I hit him with the front right-hand wheel. Anyway, a little while before that, I'd been in the MT office and the phone rang. It was a guard room. Late at night, this was. And we were about, from our camp, was about a mile up to the main drag into Salonika, up the side of the sea. And there's a chap in here, he said he's got his brigadier's car stuck down the road. Do you want you to come and tie him out? I said, what is he? He's a Humber Sniper or something. I said, oh, right. Well, Humber Sniper is one of the best vehicles the army ever had. Four-wheel drive, stable, good, you know, traction, better than a Jeep. So I walked down with this bloke, Lance Corporal. There's the brigadier sitting in the back. I said, he was in a ditch. He'd backed out of this place. There was a sort of a cafe, come whatever you call it, place. There was a lot of them there. It was out of bounds, the troops. I said, well, if you hadn't been down, you wouldn't have got stuck, would you? You know, I mean, I was a little bit outspoken in a way. I said, I got to get in trouble, you see. I said, do you want to get in the front? No, so long as you get this thing out of here. I said, all right, get in the front then. They got in the front, and they were four, as I say, they would climb up a mountain, a Humber Sniper. So I sorted the gears out and got it in gear, and it jerked its way out, dragged its way out, you see. Why couldn't he do that? I said, well, how long have you had him? He says, I've had him for a week. He said, you ought to know all about it by now. So anyway, I explained to the bloke what was what, you see. And the brigadier said, what's your name? So I see you're a corporal. I said, so I told him. I said, MT corporal. Oh, right. I'll remember that. I said, you won't come here again, will you, sir? I said, set of bounds. You know that, don't you? Oh, yes. Right, he said, you won't say anything about that, will you? I said, no, I'll keep quiet about it. I never knew his name, this bloke. Anyway, when I went to see the CO about it in this tram car, he said, I've got to send this to Brigadier, he said, because you're a war substantive corporal, and I can't do anything about it, he said. It might be a court-martial job. He said, in which case, it has to be sanctioned by the Brigadier. I said, oh, yeah. He said, I can't do that. He said, I can't take your stripes off you. He said, I don't want to. He said, but I can't do it anyway. So another couple of weeks went by, I'd go and see him again. Marched in. That's quite a caper, that is, marched in the light of a 180 the minute. Stand at ease. So he read out this thing from the brigadier. And he read a letter. And it read in the letter that he'd been in sinless the state of the accident at the same time I knocked his eyes, because I said I was dazzled by lights. He said, no, I think he's quite right. He said, because I was dazzled by the lights, and I didn't see a tram car coming either. He said, my driver did, luckily, but I didn't see it. He said, I don't think he's to blame. That's it. So that was 3-2, you see. He said, but also, he said, I happen to know this NCO quite well, mind you. He said, and I don't really think, he said, I think what it's worth is to give him a severe reprimand and fine him 50 quid. He said, are you prepared to have a severe reprimand, pay 50 quid? I said, yes, I am. So anyway, that was that. He said, now then, he said, here comes a brigadier knows you. I said, I'm afraid I can't tell you that. What do you mean you can't tell me? I said, well, I can't. I said, in view of what's just happened, I said, what you just said. I said, well, they said, anyway, am I? And he never has been known. He's dead now, the current, he's dead now. He died last year, year before. Never did know. But it's not who you know. It's not what you know, rather. It's who you know, isn't it? Just that one little incident. So all I got was fine 50 quid to pay for the glass and the tram car. The lorry was a complete write-off, as was my KD. I had to get some new KD because I've got a clip in the middle of the head here. All run down. God, dear, oh dear. Anyway, that was all. We just soldiered on. We got less and less blokes. We were doing a 12-hour guard every other night, and all their jobs in between time. We had lorries going. I had a bloke taking the lorry up to there, and then coming back to the thing, or getting a lift back and taking the lorry somewhere else. Let's say we were going on, you know. Kept falling out with a quartermaster because he wanted 10 lorries. So you only have 6. That was all wrong. When I say I want 10, I want 10. I say, well, you only have 6, you only have 6. So anyway, I got promoted sergeant on December the 23rd, that 1947. And 1947 winter was a real humdinger everywhere. Here as well. And out there we had this infernal wind. No snow. We had about half an inch. And HLI sergeant gave me a pair of skis. As soon as it snows, we'll be off up the mountain. It never did snow. I left the skis behind. So where was I going? Oh yeah, we're getting less and less blokes, as I say, and it was getting time to go home. So my boat was due to leave there in the end of February. Yeah, I got made up on the 23rd of December. That's right. So the sergeants, the officers wait on the men Christmas Day. That's an army thing, but I don't know about other regiments. In the light infantry, or in the Durhams anyway, all the sergeants' mess go to the officers' mess for 1 hour on New Year's Day for drinks. It's the only time they're ever allowed in the officers' mess. I'd been in there a couple of times by invitation because there's different things that had gone on, and I'd been there a couple of times and I enjoyed it quite well in there. I'd also been back in September, just before when I got back from the leave, before I smashed the lorry up, on an interview with 3 officers to go to Octu, which I turned down. Well, you could have told us before you didn't want to go. I said, you never told me what I was here for, did you? I said, what is it? He said, you'll go to Middle East Octu. I mean, we were Central Mediterranean Force, CMF, we were MEF, and we finished up Middle East Land Forces, and we then finished up British Forces in Greece. So that's how we went, 4th British Infantry Division. He said, you'll go to Middle East Octu, which is probably down the Gaza Strip where the Nick was. If a bloke had been 28 days in the Gaza Strip, days down there, he never went back again for a second go. He said, go to the Middle East Octu. He said, and you'll get a short service commission as a second lieutenant. I said, that's it then, I don't want it. I said, a short service commission is no good to anybody. It still isn't. Even to this day, it's no good. He said, why? He said, we need officers. I said, well, you'll go and find them somewhere else. He said, the other two are going. I said, well, they can go if they want. I said, I'm not going. I said, I have a job waiting for me when I go home. I'm going home next February or March. I said, and that's it. I've got a job. I've had enough of the army. I didn't particularly want to come in. I said, I made the most of what I've been in here. I said, I've enjoyed my time in here, and that's it, and all about it, which I did. I enjoyed my couple of years with the Durhams. It was great, it was. So, however, where was I? Oh, yeah, we were.
You said you were booked to go home in February.
Yeah, February. Well, we had a big lot went home in January. 150 went home in January or something, which left us quite depleted. Again, you know, we'd had about 200 by this time. We'd had a few, as I say, a few come in from Egypt, from the Buffs and somebody else and somebody else. And I had to go and see. I used to take the colonel out. When there was an accident or somebody wanted to know, I used to have to take him. Because by this time I got to know Salonika very well. All the back roads, and we'd had a bit of a fracas with the MTs too, driving along the promenade at night after five. From 5 o'clock till 10, the promenade in Salonika was restricted to vehicles. No vehicles at all. It was a promenade. That's what it was for. Promenade. And we both got nicked by the MPs for driving along there in jeeps. We went to Wimbledon. But that's something else. And we got off it. So I got made, as I say, I got made up sergeant. On the morning of the 1st of January, the MTO phoned up for something or other. He said, I'll see you up at the mess at 12 o'clock. I said, oh, you won't. I've got to get the sizes. The rest will be marched over. The rest of them. He said, oh, you won't. You're coming up here. And I said, well, I can't argue with him, right? So the MTO came in. He said, we've got the mess dinner time. I said, yeah, I've got to be marched up. He said, no. He said, we've got to collect Flan. That was the quartermaster. And we're going over. So we did. And I'd been told by the RSM, it was with the rest of them, we had to march over there, you see. It was only about 100 yards. So he goes in. What was it like? I said, I'll have a sherry. So I got a sherry. It was half quite tumblerful. Never drunk much sherry. I didn't drink a lot anyway. So anyway, we sat there, and I said, I can... He started on, and he said, no, then. He said, you turned down this officer's course, blah, blah, blah. I said, yes. He said, what are you going to... Why didn't sign on? I said, you've got to be joking. I turned down the officer's course, so I'm going home. I said, and you're on the bench, signing on? He said, yeah. He said, why don't you? It's a good life. I said, so it might be for you. I said, but I'm not going to sign. He said, you'll be a WO2. He said, I can't tell you any more than that. He said, but you'll be a WO2 if you sign on. He said, well, either WO2 in charge of the MT. I said, oh, yeah. So anyway, the RSM arrived and started to give me a ticking off for not marching up with him. So Flan sorted him out. So we had our air there. And I had to take the CO out to visit the scene of an accident. I don't know why his own driver didn't go, but I had to take him. Always had to take him. Got on for a while with him. He was a nice bloke. And he said, has Flanagan been on to you about signing on? I said, no. Not really. I said, he just mentioned it. He said, well, he would do that to start with, but he's the recruiting officer for the regiment, he said, for the battalion. He said, and he wants you to sign. I said, no. I said, I'm not. He said, why not? I said, because I'm going home. He said, if you sign on, you'll be home in the middle of the year anyway. I said, no, I've heard this before. You know, the army's all full of rumours. He said, we're going home. He said, the 2nd Battalion's coming home from India. He said, well, they're like us. So they were down to about 200 blokes, all newcomers. He said, we're down to the absolute minimum. He said, we don't get any smaller. And the whole brigade was being broken up. There'd be no more British troops left in Greece, only these commission people. So, an UNRWA. They were a pain in the backside, they were. So, I said, no. So he tried his hardest. He said, we're going home, he said, before June. He said, the two battalions are going to be amalgamated into one, the first. He said, and you, he said, will be a WO2 in the MT. I can promise you that. I said, yeah, but I said, you're not the army boy, eh? He said, no. He said, well, later, blah, 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 blah. So I never did. I came home. And came home on the Arundel Castle. Very nice ship, the Arundel Castle. Castle Line, cruise ship. It was broken up after that. And sure enough, we came into Southampton. We had dipped all our kit out. We had a quiet puff. There was no smoke in the customer sheds. But the most embarrassing was we were anchored off the Isle of Wight. Somebody said, where are we then? I said, I've no idea. It's off the Isle of Wight. Waiting to pick up the pilot off the nab. So we went from there to Aldershot, the train from Aldershot to Woking by truck, and the driver didn't know his way. I said, well, stop here, I'll ask this bloke. I was in the front. There was only about a dozen fellas in the back. But this MP come marched up to me, and we only had stripes on one arm of our overcoat. He said, the police sergeant wants to see you now. I said, well, before we go any further, I said, you just stick your heels together. I said, tell me, sergeant. Well, I might as well get things right in the first. So I said, go back and tell him who wants me, come get him. So he did. Sorry about the misunderstanding. I said, no, I said, it's him. The officer wants to see you. You were smoking. I said, no, it was me smoking.